Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, April 24th, 2026. We'll start today's reading on the front page, Christie Clinic, a way to really keep her memory going. Park Hill donation helps brighten radiation oncology unit. Story by Jana Wiersema, out of Champaign. Peaceful birch trees, soft clouds, graceful flowers, majestic mountains, a brilliant ocean landscape. All of these beautiful nature scenes now adorn the walls of Christie Clinic's Radiation Oncology Department, thanks to a gift made in memory of breast cancer patient Katie Parkhill. We were in and out of so many doctors' offices and clinics and hospitals, and to have a pleasing environment and something that made the experience a little better, she'd be very pleased with that, said husband David Parkhill. He added that knowing that the art might help someone during a difficult time would be important to her. The Parkhill family has donated $40,000 to the Christie Foundation. The healthcare organization announced the news in December, about a few months after Katie Parkhill's passing on August 5, 2025, at the age of 63. Family members also committed $1 million to Carle Health's Mills Breast Cancer Institute in her memory. The funds donated to Christie are primarily dedicated to the Radiation Oncology Department's interior remodel, but a portion also has been set aside for cancer patients who are struggling financially and need assistance with costs such as medications and transportation, David Parkhill said. During the final year and a half of Katie Parkhill's life, she received care from radiation oncologist Dr. Steve Damore at Christie, who is also a family friend. We're very appreciative of the care that he gave her, David Parkhill said, and so this is meaningful to us to give back a little bit and maybe help some other people that are going through the same thing. When he approached Dr. Damore about wanting to help his department and asked what was needed, the radiation oncologist replied that he'd like to improve the patient experience. Dr. Damore also knew just the woman for the job. His wife, longtime interior designer Shelley Damore of Damore Designs. She was on the case, working to beautify a department that she said can otherwise be kind of depressing due to the reason patients are there. The work included installing hanging murals throughout the department, birch trees in the treatment room, clouds above treatment equipment, an ocean in the main hallway, flowers in the women's dressing room, mountains in the men's, and so on. She added that this particular art style has the effect of making patients feel like they're immersed in the scene. The different exam rooms also have different themes, and it just kind of takes your mind off what you're there for, Shelley Damore said. She also had a wicker chandelier installed in the entryway and put in new furniture to make areas such as dressing rooms feel more homey and less like a sterile doctor's office. Shelley Damore contributed with Brianna Sullivan, a manager in the department, on the project and also got inputs from staff members. We're being very respectful of David Parkhill's donation and making sure that it's an impact that patients can immediately see and feel when they walk through the door, she said. She added that there are plans to add a picture of Katie Parkhill and a plaque. Mrs. Parkhill was a special person, and this honors her and does something special for all the patients that are coming after her, Dr. Damore said. It warms up the entire environment, gives the patients something pleasant to think about other than the reason that they're there. It lifts their spirits. It's great for the staff. It just put a smile on everybody's faces. He added that anything that can make patients happier also gives them a little bit more strength to carry on. Shelley Damore said that everyone on staff cared for Katie Parkhill, making this project very personal for everybody. Everybody was really touched by her, and this is a way to really keep her memory going, she said. Any kind of beauty that we can create here is something that Katie would definitely appreciate, Dr. Damore said. The next story on the front page, University of Illinois, What's Fun in French? Ask These Children. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Urbana. The University of Illinois main quad and more than one campus building were full of the sound of young kids talking, playing, and working together on projects Thursday morning, almost exclusively in French. The U of I's Department of French and Italian brought together around 200 students from area schools, including Champaign's Stratton Elementary and Urbana's Yankee Ridge Elementary, the 6th Grade Center, and Urbana Middle School, to celebrate their French-speaking identity. We have actually thousands of French-speaking families in the community, and a lot of people don't realize that, said U of I French professor Aurore Moroz. It's growing immensely, and there's no infrastructure for it, so we need all the support we can get. Moroz said that the majority of those families are not from France, but instead from French-speaking countries in Central and West Africa. One activity the students at the Franco Fun Kids at U of I event took part in was coloring in flags representing the countries where French is a primary language. That included 3 continents, but Moroz said they could have pulled from 5. Moroz said it is important for these kids to connect with their cultures, but also that multilingualism is valuable for neurological development, and that people who know more languages are shown to be better at math, critical thinking, open-mindedness, and more. We are now living in a world that is more mixed than ever. I think it's a richness, and I think people shouldn't have to choose to cut one part of their identities just because society is set up in a way that is not meant to cater to those parts of their identities, Moroz said. UI senior Lena Harvard, an organizational psychology major who was among the about 50 volunteers helping out at the event, said it was great to see some of the numerous cultures represented in the young kids in Champaign-Urbana. Bilingualism is such a strong feat for any individual, and we do want them to stay very much in tune with their culture, their family's culture, their ancestry, Harvard said. Harvard is also involved in other projects the Department of French and Italian supports around the community for French speakers. That includes the Le Cercle Francophone event at the Champaign Public Library for kids to learn the language, the Francophone Film Festival, and more. She and Moroz both said the Franco Fun event had hopes of advocating for French-speaking children in light of Urbana Middle School no longer offering a French multilingual program. These are kids. It's a new generation, Moroz said. It's so very important for them to be able to maintain that French, not just in a spoken manner for leisure, but really like literacy skills, so that they can be fully proficient and then capitalize on their language and identity as they grow as adults, to be able to have the entire Francophone world open for them, not just the good old USA. After working to bring the event to life, Moroz said it was amazing to see all the kids enjoying it and being celebrated. She also hopes that people around were listening to the kids as the event went on. Sometimes I feel like we live in a world that is not really giving a lot of space to kids, Moroz said. Kids make noise, and that's pretty. I don't want to live in a world where it's so very quiet that we don't have kids running around and expressing their joy. It was a beautiful chaos. And the next image on the front page is 17th Christie Clinic Illinois Race Weekend, The Starting Line. And it's a picture of Manuel Reyna jokes with Decatur's Lee Sharp on Thursday afternoon while signing in runners and handing out racing bibs at the Activities and Recreation Center on the University of Illinois campus. After this weekend, Sharp says that he will have run in 5 total races, the full marathon in 2007, 2010, and 2018, and the half in 2016. And this year, hundreds of participants cycled through the hall, and this year. Hundreds of participants cycled through the hall Thursday to pick up their goodies and check out the Health and Fitness Expo registration, and the expo continues from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. today at the ARC. Head to newsgazette.com to listen to the podcast of Thursday's News Gazette radio show, powered by GTPS Insurance, featuring reigning marathon champ Jamie Marcos. Turning now to national and world news, Mideast conflict. Small boats targeted. Trump orders military to shoot and kill alleged mine layers. Israel-Lebanon extend ceasefire. Story out of Dubai and the United Arab Emirates and the AP. President Donald Trump has ordered the U.S. military to shoot and kill small Iranian boats that deploy mines in the Strait of Hormuz, announcing the move Thursday, a day after Iran again displayed its ability to thwart traffic through the channel. Trump also announced that a ceasefire in Lebanon would be extended by 3 weeks. His post on social media Thursday about the small boats came shortly after the U.S. military seized another tanker associated with the smuggling of Iranian oil, ratcheting up the standoff with Tehran over the strait through which 20% of all crude oil and natural gas traded passed during peacetime. We have ordered the United States Navy to shoot and kill any boat, small boats though they may be, putting mines in the waters of the Strait of Hormuz, Trump posted, adding that U.S. minesweepers are clearing the strait right now. I am hereby ordering that activity to continue, but at a tripled-up level, he added. The decision to extend a pause in fighting between Israel and the Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon came during a meeting at the White House between the Israeli and Lebanese ambassadors to the United States. Meanwhile, it was still unclear when or if the U.S. and Iran would meet again in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, where mediators are trying to bring the countries together to reach a diplomatic deal ending that conflict. Negotiations initially planned this week have not happened. Iran insists it will not attend until the U.S. ends its blockade on Iranian ports and ships. The White House insists it will not take part until Tehran opens the strait to international traffic. Pope Leo XIV, returning home from a trip to Africa, urged the U.S. and Iran to return to talks to end the war. Footage shows U.S. forces on deck of tanker. The Defense Department released video footage of U.S. forces on the deck of the Guinea-flagged oil tanker Majestic X, which was seized in the Indian Ocean. The footage emerged a day after Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard attacked 3 cargo ships in the strait, capturing 2 of them, in an assault that raised new concerns about the safety of shipping through the waterway. The powerful head of Iran's judiciary, Gholam Hossein Mohseni Eji, said 3 violating ships in the strait were subject to enforcement Wednesday. The show of strength by the armed forces of Islamic Iran in the Strait of Hormuz is a source of pride, he wrote Thursday on Twitter, claiming the Americans lack the courage to approach the strait. Ship tracking data showed the Majestic X in the Indian Ocean between Sri Lanka and Indonesia, roughly the same location as the oil tanker Tifani, seized earlier by American forces. It had been bound for Zhoushan, China. Majestic X previously was named Phoenix and had been sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury Department in 2024 for smuggling Iranian crude oil in contravention of U.S. sanctions against the Islamic Republic. There was no immediate response from Iran about the seizure. Trump claims leadership rift in Iran. Trump this week extended a ceasefire to give the Iranian leadership more time to come up with a unified proposal on ending the war while maintaining an American blockade of Iranian ports. In a post Thursday, Trump claimed a leadership rift between moderates and hardliners was confounding Iran. Iran is having a very hard time figuring out who their leader is. They just don't know, Trump said. Trump has repeatedly said during the ceasefire that began April 8th that his team is dealing with Iranian officials who want to make a deal, while acknowledging that his decision to kill several top leaders has come with complications. Iran's president and its parliamentary speaker posted statements on social media declaring the country has no hardliners or moderates. We are all Iranians and revolutionaries, they said. A spokesperson for the Iranian Foreign Ministry said Trump's claim of a leadership rift was a deflection. Other Iranian officials said on social media that the country was unified. Trump, while speaking to reporters at the White House, pushed back against questions about the conflict exceeding the 4 to 6 week timeline that he and aides previously set for the war. I don't want to rush myself, Trump said, adding that the U.S. took the country out militarily in the first 4 weeks. Now all we're doing is sitting back and seeing what deal can be made, and if they don't want to make a deal, then I'll finish it up militarily, Trump said. He said he would not use a nuclear weapon against Iran. Meanwhile, three aircraft carriers were in the region after the USS George H.W. Bush arrived in the Indian Ocean. One carrier was in the Arabian Sea, and another was in the Red Sea, military officials said. Israel-Lebanon talks lead to truce extension. Trump said a second round of talks between Israel and Lebanon in Washington went very well and resulted in a ceasefire extension for Israel and the Hezbollah militant group. The United States is going to work with Lebanon in order to help it protect itself from Hezbollah, Trump said on his Truth Social platform. The latest war between Israel and Hezbollah started after Israel and the U.S. launched attacks on Iran and the Tehran-backed militants fired rockets into northern Israel. The ceasefire first took effect for a 10-day period starting Friday. Underscoring the truce's fragility, Israel's military said it struck missile launchers in Lebanon that had fired into its borders. Hezbollah said it fired at the Israeli town of Shtula in response to Israeli attacks on the Lebanese village of Yatir. Lebanon's public health ministry said an Israeli airstrike killed three people further north in the area of Nabatiya. The Israeli military said it killed three militants who launched a missile toward an Israeli warplane. Each side has accused the other of breaching the truce. Trump reiterated that the U.S. continues to demand that Iran stop its backing of Iranian-allied militias in the Mideast, including Hezbollah in Lebanon, as part of any deal between Washington and Tehran to end the U.S. war on Iran. Yeah, they'll have to cut that, Trump said to a reporter's question about aiding Hezbollah. That's a must. And the next story on National and World News, Trump administration. Medical marijuana drug class changed. Shift includes tax break for state licensees. Out of Washington and the AP. President Donald Trump's acting attorney general on Thursday signed an order reclassifying state-licensed medical marijuana as a less dangerous drug, a major policy shift long sought by advocates who said cannabis should never have been treated like heroin by the federal government. The order signed by Todd Blanche does not legalize marijuana for medical or recreation use under federal law, but it does change the way it's regulated, shifting licensed medical marijuana from Schedule 1, reserved for drugs without medical use and with high potential for abuse, to the less strictly regulated Schedule 3. It also gives licensed medical marijuana operators a major tax break and eases some barriers to researching cannabis. The Trump administration also said it was jump-starting the process for reclassifying marijuana more broadly, setting a hearing to begin in late June. Trump told his administration in December to work as quickly as possible to reclassify marijuana. On Saturday, as the Republican president signed an unrelated executive order about psychedelics, he seemed to express frustration that it was taking so long. Blanche said Thursday that the Department of Justice was delivering on President Trump's promise to expand Americans' access to medical treatment options. This rescheduling action allows for research on the safety and efficacy of this substance, ultimately providing patients with better care and doctors with more reliable information, he said in a statement. Blanche's action largely legitimizes medical marijuana programs in the 40 states that have adopted them. It sets up an expedited system for state-licensed medical marijuana producers and distributors to register with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency Administration. Next in National and World News, Court of Claims ruling, Michigan let off hook for 2020 dam collapse. State not to blame for conditions that led to its failure, judge finds. Out of Detroit in the AP, the state of Michigan was cleared of liability Thursday in a disastrous 2020 dam failure that flooded communities, destroyed more than 100 homes, and drained a popular lake. Court of Claims Judge James Redford acknowledged the real and lasting damages of the Edenville dam failure, but he said days of relentless rain and an unprecedented 100-year flood triggered the calamity in the Midland area, not the state-authorized level of Wixom Lake. Redford cited experts who said a lower lake level before the disaster was unlikely to have prevented the catastrophe. He also said state regulators had received by default a dam with inadequate spillway capacity after a federal hydropower license was yanked in 2018. This does not mean that what plaintiffs suffered and continue to suffer is not an immensely difficult and heavy burden, the judge said in a 100-page opinion that followed a January trial in Grand Rapids. Lawyers representing thousands of people sued the state, claiming decisions by environmental regulators contributed to the dam collapse and ruined property values and their enjoyment of Wixom Lake, 150 miles northwest of Detroit. If Redford had ruled in favor of property owners, the case would have moved next to financial recovery. "It's very disappointing. I know our clients are devastated," attorney Venn Johnson said. "That's why God created appellate courts." The judge said the dam failure could not be likened, as lawyers for the plaintiffs argued, to the 2014-15 Flint water crisis, in which key decisions by the state caused lead to leach from old pipes and spoiled the system. The privately owned dam on the Tittabawassee River produced hydroelectric until a federal license was revoked. A reservoir behind the dam is known as Wixom Lake. The dam was in the process of being turned over to area residents when the failure occurred, releasing a torrent that also overtopped the downstream Stanford Dam and flooded the city of Midland. The lake rose more than 5 feet above its normal level and 3 feet higher than the highest level recorded in 1929. The east side of the dam's soil embankment was overwhelmed and became unstable. Since the failure, Wixom Lake is being slowly restored. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission asked experts to study what happened at the Edenville and Sanford dams. The 2022 report said failure was foreseeable and preventable, but could not be attributed to any one individual group or organization. The former owner, Boyce Hydro, filed for bankruptcy protection after the disaster. In 2023, a federal judge granted the state's request for a $120 million judgment against Lee Mueller, who controlled Boyce Hydro, for damage to fisheries and the ecosystem for mussels. But he too filed for bankruptcy protection. The Edenville Dam failure was tragic, and while the evidence has always shown that the state was not responsible, we have taken decisive action against those who were, Attorney General Dana Nessel said Thursday. And next in national and world news, multi-state investigation. Ex-officer suspected of planning racially targeted mass shooting. Tip from his family led to arrest at Florida hotel. Story out of New Orleans and the AP. Authorities say a former North Carolina law enforcement officer planned to kill black people in a mass shooting at a major New Orleans festival, but was arrested at a Florida hotel with a handgun and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Authorities in several states did not name the event, but the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, commonly known as Jazz Fest, runs from Thursday through May 3rd. The gathering attracted about 460,000 people last year, organizers said. Christopher Gillum of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, was wanted for terroristic threats, the Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office in Florida posted online Thursday. Federal authorities told the sheriff's office that Gillum, who is white, was in the Florida panhandle, heading to do a mass shooting at a large festival in Louisiana. The FBI in New Orleans said it's working on the investigation with law enforcement across the three states. The sheriff's office said Gillum was arrested without incident Wednesday night at a hotel in the city of Destin and posted a picture of him being led away in handcuffs. Deputies recovered a handgun and about 200 rounds of ammunition from the hotel room, the statement said. Gillum was arrested as a fugitive from justice and will be extradited to Louisiana to face charges there, the sheriff's office said. It was not immediately known if he had a lawyer. The Associated Press left a message at phone numbers listed for him. Gillum's family reported him missing on Tuesday, and he has a history of self-harm, according to Lieutenant Clint Lyons of the Alamance County Sheriff's Office in North Carolina. Gillum's family told law enforcement he had a gun and had expressed recent threats to harm black people, according to a bulletin from police in Burlington, North Carolina. Lyons said Gillum left the state before his agency could prepare the paperwork to involuntarily commit him to psychiatric treatment. Lyons said there are no criminal grounds to detain Gillum despite his comments about black people because there was no victim, but the agency decided it needed to spread the word about him to other departments. Gillum was located and stopped by law enforcement in Okaloosa County on Wednesday, according to Lyons and the Burlington Police Bulletin. However, he did not present any grounds for involuntary commitment or criminal charges and was allowed to continue on his way, the bulletin stated. Gillum told officers he was en route to New Orleans, the report added. Okaloosa deputies were initially asked to make a welfare check on him Wednesday morning, but didn't know he'd been making violent threats, Sheriff Spokeswoman Michelle Nicholson said. Later that day, after the sheriff's office learned Gillum was being investigated, deputies surveilled him until an arrest warrant arrived from Louisiana, she added. At this time, there are no known direct threats to any festivals in Louisiana, State Police spokesman Trooper Danny Barincha said. Gillum served as a sworn police officer in Chapel Hill from 2004 until his resignation in 2019, town spokesperson Alex Carrasquillo said. And just to fill in a little bit more time here, we'll turn to the daybook, Almanac. There are 251 days left in the year. Some notable birthdays: actor Shirley MacLaine is 92, actor, singer, filmmaker Barbara Streisand is 84, fashion designer Jean-Paul Gaultier is 74, actor Eric Bogosian is 73, actor Michael O'Keefe is 71, actor comedian Cedric the Entertainer is 62, actor Jimon Hounsou is 62, actor Aidan Gillen is 58, actor Rory McCann is 57, Latin pop singer Alejandro Fernandez is 55, baseball Hall of Famer Chipper Jones is 54, actor Derek Luke is 52, singer TV personality Kelly Clarkson is 44, country singer Carly Pierce is 36, actor musician Joe Keery is 34, actor Jack Quaid is 34, actor Jordan Fisher is 32, golfer Lydia Ko is 29, singer Skylar Simone is 24. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of your News Gazette, dated Friday, April 24th, 2026. Please stay tuned.